Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Were disastrous, close quote. That conclusion came in 1934.
Congressional hearings, as you're hearing in the background, are beginning right now into the alleged Goldman Sachs investor fraud. Remember, they allegedly sold mortgage derivatives that were designed to fail, not disclosing that fact, while betting against those securities themselves. Again, allegedly, Goldman denies the charge. The CEO, Lloyd Blankfein, will testify, as will the accused 31-year-old trading executive wunderkind Fabrice Touré, who boasted in an email that when the housing market comes crashing down, only he, the fabulous Fab, would be left standing. And these hearings come on the morning after Republicans in the Senate filibuster to block President Obama's banking reform bill. Let's dip into the hearings just a little bit right now. We are hearing the chairman of the committee, Senator Carl Levin, speaking right now. Just for a few seconds, and we'll come back.
By the firm and its executives provide an inaccurate portrayal of Goldman's actions during 2007, the critical year when the housing bubble burst and the financial crisis took hold. The firm's own documents show that while it was marketing risky mortgage-related securities, it was placing large bets against the U.S. mortgage market. The firm has repeatedly denied making those large bets, despite overwhelming evidence that they did so. Now, why does that matter? Surely there is no law, ethical guideline, or moral injunction against profit. But Goldman Sachs didn't just make money. It profited by taking advantage.
So you get the idea from Carl Levin, and let's jump right into that question, and then we'll go back into the hearings, especially if Fabrice Touré or someone else, one of the principals, begins to testify while we're in this coverage. Robin Farzad, senior writer with Bloomberg Businessweek, joins us now. Robin also wrote yesterday about the business side of the Wall Street Journal's new local news section, and maybe we'll touch on that after we look mostly at the journalistic content yesterday. Hi, Robin. Welcome back to
Brian,
WNYC.
It's a pleasure. How are you?
Good. So right to what Carl Levin, Senator Levin, was just talking about, because part of the Goldman charge is a dispute, really, over a very basic fact. Did they bet massively against the housing market, or did they not? Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO, says they didn't.
You know, a lot of this is going to be captured in the details. They may well have bet massively against the housing market as an overall firm-wide hedge. Not that this is a kind of a backroom smoke and cognac conspiracy that they hatched up, but just something that they directionally decided just to cover their own tails, that we need to be less long. In order to do that, we need to go more short. But you're going to see Senate hearings today that really dispute that matter.
So the related question that Senator Levin also referred to, these charges are 10 days old now. I mean, from what you can tell on this question, were the derivatives at the heart of the suit designed to fail or just designed neutrally to allow investors who wanted to make a bet on risky mortgages to do so, so because they might make some money?
I get the impression that they were designed to fail because you had a client come in with specifically that mandate, a prime brokerage client saying, please design this for us. We don't want a more robust security than need be. John Paulson wanted to go short and wanted to go short big time. So to the extent there was an opening for him to backfill this security with the worst of subprime mortgage offerings, they took advantage of that opportunity. As I said before, it's both a regulatory and a market arbitrage, and they took advantage of that.
What does that mean, both the regulatory and a market arbitrage?
Well, that they, the players that decided in 2006 and 2007 that something was really amiss, that Fannie and Freddie were going to collapse, that AIG was on the hook for all this, they realized that the regulators, the SEC, the NASD, the Department of Justice, everybody was asleep at the switch. So they could take advantage of a market for derivatives that was really then a wild, wild west. From a market perspective, there was an arbitrage here in that you had a patsy, an AIG willing to insure this type of massive short. If nobody was out there willing to be a counterparty to that, this whole Paulson and Goldman thing would not have been possible in the first place.
All right. I don't want to give the politicians carte blanche just to filibuster, to use a currently unpopular word, and go on and on, which, of course, they're going to do some of the time. But let's go back in again a little bit and hear what's happening right now, see if Senator Levin is still speaking.
And the market for mortgage-related financial products flourished. But the party couldn't last, and we all know what happened. Housing prices stopped rising, and the bubble burst. Investors started having second thoughts about the mortgage-backed securities that Wall Street was churning out. In July of 2007, two Bear Stearns offshore hedge funds specializing in mortgage-related securities suddenly collapsed. That same month, the credit rating agencies...
And Carl Levin, Senator from Michigan, Democrat from Michigan, on the investigation subcommittee, going over the well-worn history of some of the basics of the collapse and where some of the investment house players were. And we're with Robin Farzad, senior writer with Bloomberg Business Week. Why is Fabrice Touré testifying before Congress without immunity today if he's the central player in the civil suit alleging fraud? Why did he agree to this?
There has to be an incentive being dangled in front of him. It's effectively what was then a 27-year-old and now maybe, what, 32, 33-year-old's word versus the most profitable investment bank in history. And it's just delicious theater for them to be able to bring him out there. The SEC and the Senate regulators realize that if you bring it out, it illustrates in very sharp relief how reckless this whole thing is, that maybe the whole world, the whole financial world was in this kid's hands. And by the way, it's going to whittle down to Goldman's word versus his. So who are you going to believe?
Well, there will be documents, right? And when you say Goldman's word versus his, you mean Goldman as a company against their own trader, Fabrice Touré?
They can always portray him as a rogue trader, which is a, you know, an archetype that Wall Street has had for time immemorial.
Aha. Uh-huh. So when you say they may be dangling something in front of him, the government might be, that he may come out and say things that are damning to the company today because it may be in his personal interest to do so?
Of course. And especially with the new SEC that we have with Robert Khuzami at the helm, these guys have – you know, they really cut their teeth on practices of turning drug witnesses and mafia witnesses. And so that's the school of thought that they came from.
Interesting. Do you expect to learn anything today from these hearings, or will it be a dog and pony show by both Goldman people and members of Congress that sheds little new light on anything?
The emails, if we, you know, the teasers that they threw out yesterday in Carl Levin's committee are any indication, the emails are going to be really exciting. And these are the things that are going to run on endless loop and you're going to see on the nightly news. And who would have ever thought that Goldman Sachs might become the second item on the 11 o'clock local news? But that's effectively the world that we've inherited.
What are some of these newly released emails?
They're trying to get to the heart. They're trying to attack and assail this central Goldman defense that we did not have a directional bias, that this was not a vast Goldman Sachs conspiracy, that this was all something we did in the course of being a market maker and in the course of being prudent risk managers. Now, if there are emails that fly in the face
prudent
of that.
Prudent risk managers meaning we're going to take bets pro and we're going to take bets con.
And if we're too pro, if we're too kind of leveraged to the hilt, that we have to go short to equilibrate that, to bring that down just from a CYA perspective, which is laudable because so many other Wall Street firms failed. But if there are things out there that say, oh man, this stuff is going to fall apart, it's such crap, it's such junk, akin to what we saw during the Elliott Spitzer investigations of Wall Street Research, then that'll be very damning.
By the way, why is this a civil suit against Goldman as opposed to a criminal charge?
You know, the FBI and the DOJ have yet to get involved.
I mean, if it's fraud, fraud sounds like something criminal.
Right. There might be... I'm not a lawyer. I only play one on TV, but I think that there's something in the boilerplate. If you look at the Abacus deal, the collateralization deal that is kind of the center of this alleged fraud, this is one of the most well-monitored firms on Wall Street. It has all these compliance officers. It pays lawyers an ungodly amount to write exactly what's in there for sophisticated investors. So it's very hard, I think, from a criminal perspective to say that there was this malice that they had there, that they were looking to con some average unsophisticated investor. I think the civil suit meets a lower threshold of burden of proof. And in fact, that's what the SEC sought here. A lot of people out there are already saying that the case is not that rock solid, that it's going to be something that really aims to put the screws to Goldman Sachs to potentially settle and settle big.
As a civil suit, what are the potential consequences for Fabrice Touré? For Goldman, I presume there could be a big damage award they would have to pay either to investors or to the government. You can explain that. And what about for Touré personally?
He could come out and admit something. He can say that he was reckless. He could have his securities license revoked, you know, whatever, Series 7, Series 63, be barred from the industry. But his name has kind of become so infamous already that everybody's talking about, you know, Fabulous Fab, that, you know, you wonder if he's going to go into, I wouldn't say fast food, but maybe real estate when it comes back.
Teaching third grade.
Yes.
Later in the program, we're going to do a segment specifically for people considering mid-career changes from anything into teaching. So Fabrice Touré, when you're finished testifying, you may want to listen. And for Goldman, if they're found guilty of civil fraud, do they have to pay something to someone?
There's going to be some payment, and there's going to be an agreement that comes out if there is a huge payment for something to the effect of separating out their derivatives business or agreeing to policing or putting up, constructing on their own volition, a Chinese wall between some of these units.
Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek, as we talk about the Goldman Sachs hearings and the Senate Investigations Subcommittee today. We're getting word of some of the prepared testimony now being released by Lloyd Blankfein, the Goldman CEO. And what we know now is that he doesn't name Fabrice Touré by name or throw any individual trading arms under the bus, but he is going to say our risk management processes did not and could not provide absolute clarity. They highlighted uncertainty about evolving conditions in the housing market. That uncertainty dictated our decision to attempt to reduce the firm's overall risk. That's the CYA betting sure. on both sides you were talking about. He goes on, much has been said about the supposedly massive short Goldman Sachs had on the U.S. housing market. The fact is we were not consistently or significantly net short in the market in residential mortgage-related products in 2007 and 2008. And I guess he'll present as evidence for that that they lost a lot of money in housing, didn't they?
Yes, or that counterfactually that they didn't make as much as they could have and should have if they were indeed conspiring to take down the entire market. 2008 was really not such a gangbusters year for them. They did have to take some bailout money. They had to go hat in hand to Warren Buffett on expensive terms. But, you know, ultimately, I think what lawyers may classify as plausible deniability, maybe an ethicist or a therapist would say is, you know, likely denial. They're in denial.
Or a civil jury.
A civil jury, that's right.
Well, a related question then that still baffles me. If everyone knew the subprime derivative in question was based on high-risk loans, and that there was at least risk here, a lot of people would bet for it, a lot of people would bet against it, why did the ratings agencies give it a AAA rating, which is supposed to mean that it's as safe as a U.S. Treasury bond? Do I have this right, that it got that rating from at least one agency? Were the rating agencies corrupt? Were they incapable of knowing what Fabrice Touré knew? How could that happen?
It was a matter of salutary neglect and see no evil, hear no evil. It was corruption. It was greed. I mean, they took a lot of money. You know, S&P, Moody's, Fitch, they were minting money in the middle part of the decade by just signing off on these things. And they knew their emails there that they knew that they could not get, they could not deep down and dissect all of these esoteric and exotic securities. So they opted to look the other way. As I've said on your show before, this is one giant diffusion of responsibility. If it's the bond manager saying we can only invest in AAA rated things, ergo we're subcontracting our due diligence to the ratings agencies. The ratings agencies are saying, well, surely the banks aren't originating this kind of stuff. They're not going to sell it down to us if you know they're ultimately on the line for this. So everybody kind of passed the buck all the way down to the individual homeowner. And this comes now full circle to Senate Inquisition in the year 2010.
So does the banking reform bill, beyond Inquisition, deal with the ratings agencies at the policy level? Does it make them stop being paid by the very firms whose bonds they are being hired to rate, or anything to clean up that end of the business and eliminate the conflict of interest?
You know, that jig is up. That's fighting something that I think everybody believed in and espoused as late as 2006 and 2007. The ratings agencies have been thoroughly discredited. What does remain, though, the bond managers and the investment community, the multi-trillion dollar investment community, remains disproportionately invested in what the ratings agencies say. It's something that's very hard to change with regulatory fiat. You could come out and decertify them and say, you know, let a thousand roses blossom and all these boutique rating agencies show up. But at the end of the day, if the individual bond manager, if the individual mortgage originator doesn't go in there and look at the creditworthiness, the ratings agencies are going to be pointless.
Let's go back into the hearing, because now I think Senator Levin is starting to detail a few of these newly released emails from Goldman.
Fine, summed it up this way, quote, "Of course we didn't dodge the mortgage mess. We lost money, then made more than we lost because of shorts," close quote. The conflict of interest that lies behind that statement is striking. The Securities and Exchange Commission has filed a civil complaint alleging that in another transaction involving a product called Abacus, Goldman violated security laws by misleading investors about a mortgage-related financial instrument. The SEC's complaint alleges that Goldman Sachs, in effect, helped stack the deck against the buyers of the instrument that it sold.
All right. Again, Senator Levin coming out of the email content back into the charge. We'll take a short break here. We'll continue with Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek, go back into the hearings depending on what's going on. And we will also talk to Lauren, one of the members of our Help Wanted community, who is looking for work. And she is looking for work in the financial industry. And we're going to find out what a Wall Street job seeker is hearing as buzz on the street about all of this. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as congressional hearings are beginning this hour into the alleged Goldman Sachs investor fraud. Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek is still with us. And joining us briefly on this today is one of the bloggers in our Help Wanted Facebook community for job seekers, Lauren, who is currently seeking work in the finance industry. How does all this look to someone who's standing outside her industry looking in as the post-crash reform debate comes to a head? Hi, Lauren. Thanks for coming back on. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Remind our listeners, what did you do in the finance sector before, and what kind of work are you looking for now?
Sure. I was in investment banking and equity capital markets, and I'm currently pursuing opportunities in equity capital markets as well as investor relations and corporate access.
And I gather you were, for example, at a finance sector networking cocktail party last week, mostly for women in the industry. Were people buzzing about the reform efforts or the charges against Goldman Sachs?
I actually did overhear and was involved in a couple of conversations about both those issues. On the Goldman front, the majority of the people I spoke with felt that Goldman really didn't do anything wrong, and it was kind of the quote-unquote everyone does it mentality. So the consensus really was that it's just all going to blow over sooner rather than later.
Well, if ever, go ahead.
I was just going to comment on the Obama financial reform.
Uh-huh.
As for that and his last speech last Thursday, the few people who were speaking about that last Thursday, they're not really happy with the way Obama is handling the situation. They believe he doesn't have expertise or enough experience with these issues to know what he's really talking about. And overall, they kind of think right now he's bad for Wall Street.
I gather you've been writing some kind of column about the Goldman Sachs fraud allegations. What's the context for that?
Actually, I had an interview, and the second part of the interview was to write a few columns on different financial institutions, one of which was the Goldman fraud issue. And the topic was how I think they can secure their reputation of being the golden boy on Wall Street.
What was your advice?
My advice was, at the time at least, to just accept that you did something wrong, apologize for it, claim that you did something that was fraudulent, and that way people will forgive and eventually move on.
Does it put you in a funny position in a job interview, wondering if you'll be asked to defend the industry when you're feeling a little critical of it?
You know, to tell you the truth, I after reading more about things, because the article that I had to write was as soon as this Goldman information came out, and as things have been progressing and I've been talking to people and learning more about the issue, I don't really think there's a lot to defend. I think that Goldman did something that a lot of the banks were doing. If the mortgage industry didn't fall, you know, no one would be looking at Goldman right now, because their investors would have profited, and Goldman, because they shorted, they wouldn't be in the position they are now.
So are you going to say that to job interviewers in the industry, you know, as you're there as an interviewee?
I kind of tend to think that a lot of people that I would interview with in this industry might feel the same way as me, mm-hmm. just based on what I've been reading and conversations I've been having with people in the industry.
All right, Lauren, good luck out there. Thanks for coming on with us again.
Thank you again for having me, Brian.
And again, you can read Lauren's post and our other job-seeking bloggers in our Facebook community, which you can get to through our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for Help Wanted. And another reminder that in about an hour, we'll be doing a Help Wanted series segment here on the air, and that is for people interested in becoming teachers or switching careers into teaching, which is still considered to be a likely growth field in our New York area well into the future. And Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Business Week, before you go, just connect for us the political moment of the reform bill coming up before the Senate, and the Republicans successfully filibustered to block it last night, at least for the moment, and these hearings of putting Goldman Sachs on the witness stand. Is this a coincidence?
No coincidence at all. There's going to be great theater that comes out of this, and the Democrats floated up a trial balloon yesterday, came short of the required votes they needed to sustain a debate on political reform. There are lots of moving parts to it, but the more they can vilify and crucify the likes of Lloyd Blankfein and his people at Goldman Sachs and connect them to the Republican Party, the harder it's going to be for the GOP to keep stonewalling on financial regulation as November approaches.
Robin Farzad, senior writer for Bloomberg Business Week. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll listen to about another 30 seconds live of Senator Carl Levin as we go out here. And a couple of reminders as we do that. Number one, if you want to just listen to the hearings today, we are streaming them live on our website. So you can go to WNYC.org and listen live. Also coming up, we'll talk about a very different kind of fraud that's in the news today, safety inspector fraud from the buildings department in New York City. This is very potentially dangerous and infuriating. And then George Will in a few minutes on politics and baseball. So stay with us.
Investigation into the root causes of the grave recession.
This is now Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine.
You and the ranking member, Senator Coburn, have cast a bright light into the dark corners of financial institutions that helped to inflate the housing bubble and then reaped billions of dollars when it burst, leaving millions of Americans in debt and jobless with destroyed dreams and financial insecurity. This investigation raises two overarching issues. First, we must recognize that the dynamic innovation of our capital markets can have a downside. It can produce pain rather than prosperity. Financial markets therefore require updated and effective regulation to help prevent excesses that can inflict great harm on wholly innocent Americans, be they workers, retirees, or small business owners.
Senator Susan Collins, Brian Lehrer on WNYC, alleged New York City building inspector safety fraud after this.